I guess next is my turn. My name is Bhupinder Farmaha and I'm working as a postdoc in Purdue University. I'll be talking about growing perennial and annual crops on marginal land. I would like to acknowledge the co-author of this study, Dr. Jeff Fulinik and Sylvie Bruder. Let's first talk about what are marginal lands. So I redrawn this picture from this paper, Journal of Agriculture Sciences. And the idea what is marginal is that is not totally unproductive and totally not productive in terms of economics involved. So you can grow crops or do grazing on those lands, but it might not be economical for row crop production. That's what I mean by the marginal lands. Now, there could be several different kind of marginal lands. And recently, from University of Nebraska, Lincoln Humberto Blanco, he published a review, and he summarized what are marginal land and what are their potential to grow cellulosic biofuel feedstocks. And there could be different classes of the marginal lands. And in our case, what we did is we had a very nutrient poor soils, basically very low soil test levels for P and K. And then we also had a shallower soil profile. Once we were hitting 18 inches, then we saw gravels and stones and things like that. This land also had a moderate erosivity. So these were the things that we considered at marginal for this particular site. Historically, there are several trials being done on these plots, so they have very low test levels of P as well as K. So what was the need of this study? The first thing was we wanted to see how perennial crops do on marginal land, and then basically to see a side-by-side comparison of these systems, which is lacking in most of the literature. And part of the reason is it takes a couple of years for the perennials to establish over time. It takes 3 to 5 years for like miscanthus, switchgrass, or other different dedicated energy crops to establish their ceiling high biomass yield. So that was a interest in this study. So the objective was, if we have these systems side by side into the marginal lands, how would they perform in terms of the biomass production and how would they perform in terms of the greenhouse gas emission? We wanted to see whether the total direct greenhouse gas emission per unit of the biomass yield produced is less in one system than the other or not. And then we also wanted to see how the differential level of P and K fertility affect the biomass and the greenhouse gas emission for switchgrass and miscanthus. And this is something lacking because most of the studies on energy crop or biofuel is mostly dedicated on greenhouse gas emission related to the management practices, particularly like tillage or the nitrogen applications. But very few or hardly any studies looking at the P and K. Most of the studies are looking how do they perform on low P and K test sites. But in our case, we established a differential P and K fertility. So this is a layout of the experiment. What we had on this side, we are looking at the miscanthus study that started in 2011. And we had three different treatments, nitrogen and phosphorus and potassium. Basically, we applied either no phosphorus and potassium or we applied 30 kilogram of P and 300 kilogram of K from 2011 onward. And these are the gray plots. These we selected from this trial for our purpose in this study. And this is a switchgrass study. We have these two replications here and these two replications here. And in this case, same case, the difference between switchgrass and miscanthus is that we did not impose any PK treatment during the course of the study. So historically, from 2001 to 2004, these plots were treated either with the application of P and K or without P and K application. And in this case, the application was applied like 75 kilogram of P and 400 kilogram of K to establish very high soil test levels. And then we had a study here. We were looking at the perennial grasses, big blue stem and other things, just to see a native prairie grass, how do they perform compared to the dedicated energy crop versus the annual arable crops. So in this case, this is another study we are looking at, that maize and sorghum. In this case, we considered dual purpose sorghum. It is a continuous maize and continuous sorghum from 2011. And we had treatment on this case like nitrogen, different rate. But in our purpose, we selected either control no application of N or 150 kilogram of nitrogen. So these were the four different systems we were comparing, and you can see the complexity involved in this study. But this also gave us an opportunity to have a side-by-side comparison, which we cannot do in a real time for short duration of study. So let us take a look on the soil test levels. So I don't have time to go into the methodology, but if somebody has a question, I can visit with later on. What we did, we wanted to see what are the soil test levels by the time we did the study. So in 2013, that's the time when we collected the biomass yield and the greenhouse gas samplings. And in these 2 years, we noticed that in the case of Miscanthus, minus means control P and K plot. And in the control P and K plot, we had very low soil test levels of P. And plus means we applied where 30 kilogram of P and 300 kilogram of K. So you can see that there is a large difference between these two treatments. And in case of Miscanthus also, we can see same thing. But one thing is noticeable here, in case of plus Miscanthus treatment, you can see the values are almost more than tripled compared to the switchgrass. And the reason being because in case of Miscanthus, the treatment were imposed during the course of the study. But in case of switchgrass, they were actually historical treatment, the way it was maintained. So they're called legacy plots in this case. So same thing with the soil test levels also. You can see that in the minus, when we did not apply P and K, and plus means when we applied P and K, and you can see there is a greater difference between these two treatments. And same kind of the differential difference we have seen in control plus treatment for switchgrass also. And again, these were imposed during the time of the study, and these were imposed historically, not at the time of the study. So let us take a look in the weather condition for the 2 years. We noticed high interannual variability between 2 years for total precipitation and monthly precipitation. And on the left side, what we are looking is total precipitation on the y-axis and monthly total precipitation on the x-axis. And you can see these vertical bar are representing actually 10-year mean. And then the black bars, black lines and the upside triangles are actually representing 2013 data set. And gray line are representing actually 2014 data set. And you can see that in 2014, we had very high total rainfall, but also annual monthly precipitation very high compared to 10-year average as well as to 2013 from August onward. When we look at early spring condition in April, that was the only time when 2013 had more total precipitation compared to the other. But for the rest of the season, we can see that it was almost can be considered as a dry year. We did not see any much difference in mean air temperature between 2 years and also relative to the 10-year average. Now I will present results from the biomass yield. In this case, since we have energy crops and the grain crops, so in order to make a comparison, we are looking at the total biomass, not the grain yield. And we can see here, so just a point on this one. In this one, we are looking at the most significant interaction for each system. So what we are presenting here, it is an interaction on the, before that, on the y-axis, we are looking at the biomass yield ranging from 0 to 40 ton per hectare. And on the panel, the first chart is showing annual grasses, continuous corn and continuous sorghum. And in the second chart, we are looking at the native prairie. We did not apply any NPK application. And in the Miscanthus, we do have PK treatment, and we also have the nitrogen treatment. And in case of switchgrass, we also had nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium treatment. So this is the most significant interaction in each system. We can see that between 2 years, the biomass yield actually declined drastically in case of maize from almost around 14 ton to 7 ton. And the same happened with the sorghum also. And like I mentioned that, it is from under continuous corn and continuous sorghum from 2011 onward. And we had a very, we had a lot of pest and disease pressure in 2014. Also, there was a late harvesting in 2014, and that was one of the reason we did see such a big decline in case of annuals. But when we look at the perennials, you can see there is some decline in case of switchgrass, but it is not as drastic as we have seen in case of annuals. In native prairie, in case we have seen actually around 40 plus percent increase in the biomass yield. But we did not see any increase in the switchgrass yield with PK application or the nitrogen application. Now let us take a look into the biomass yield. So the biomass yield was, if we leave Miscanthus and we look at the other three systems, we can see the highest biomass achieved was almost 16 ton. And Miscanthus in all those treatment, it was more than 16 ton, even when we are looking at the control plots also. So you can see that the Miscanthus is highly productive system compared to the other systems. We did not notice any increase in biomass production with additional P and K application. And you have seen in previous slide that there was a big difference in soil test levels between control and PK applications. Now I am showing results from the nitrate flux. What we are looking here is a panel of four chart. On the y-axis, I am showing the nitrous oxide flux, basically how many grams of nitrous oxide was emitted per hectare per day. And this is the time of sampling. We did sampling each week, once a week. And these are 2 years, 2013 and 2014. This is the annual grass study, this is a Miscanthus study, this is a native prairie study, and this is switchgrass study. And these vertical blue bars are representing the amount of precipitation occurred on daily basis. And before going to that, you can see there are two different kind of arrows also, black downward arrow and the green downward arrow. Black is basically when the planting was done, and the green was actually when the nitrogen treatments were imposed. And in this case, nitrogen and P and K were imposed. Now let us take a look how they are compared. And you can see when we make comparison among four different systems, there were high daily nitrous oxide flux in terms of Miscanthus, and it is particularly more when we imposed P and K treatment. So that's quite interesting. That makes me feel like something is going on with nitrous oxide flux when we apply P and K. And this is something new. We don't have that information available in the published literature. Now, let us look at the switchgrass. So it is same baseline what we are seeing here, almost around 80 gram. And we can see that it was more in switchgrass and Miscanthus compared to the annual. So that means if the Miscanthus was high productive, but we also see more emission. But it is more related to how we manage P and K fertility. Okay, now I am showing the greenhouse gas intensity. The way I have calculated is actually how much total greenhouse gas emission or the nitrous oxide emission is emitted per unit of biomass yield. And we can see here is, like I have shown in the previous slide, that the Miscanthus, it was producing high biomass. It has comparable nitrous oxide emission. But when we compared them as a ratio, we can see that on this chart, nitrous oxide emission, basically how many grams of nitrous oxide was emitted per megagram of biomass produced. And you can see around when we are looking at 80 grams, the Miscanthus was actually lower compared to the other system, except this treatment. And that treatment is when we had very high level of P and K application. So that tells me that the nitrous oxide emission is also not only governed by the nitrogen application, but also P and K application. So this is something we have to look in the future about the fertility management program for the dedicated energy crops. In terms of the switchgrass, you can see that there is a more emission also, but only in 1 year. So it is highly dependent on the environmental condition. Let us take a look on the annual grass. We did not see any difference between the maize and sorghum, but it was mainly driven between the inter-annual variability. So the first conclusion I have is that the Miscanthus actually was producing high biomass and low nitrous oxide emission, whether we are looking at the emission intensity for the nitrous oxide or global warming potential. I haven't shown the result on the global warming potential where we have summed all three gases, but that was the same result we have seen. And we noticed that when we applied the nitrogen for the annuals, there was a high increase in the biomass yield. But when we looked at the perennials, there was an increase with the nitrous oxide, with the biomass yield. for the nitrogen application, but it was not as greater as it was in case of annuals. So now somebody might ask me that does it make sense to apply more NPK to the dedicated energy crops or not, considering the fact that they can do good in low P and K testing soils. So based on the result of this studies, we can say that the even raising soil test levels for P and K for these miscanthus, it is not good because it is going to increase your nitrous oxide emission. And then last we see that the nitrous oxide emission, they are also interacting with the nitrogen application and PK fertility. So this is the first time we have seen that result. So with this, I will conclude my study, and if somebody has a question, I would be happy to answer. Any question, please? Sure, please. Can you please? Yeah. So, as per my understanding, actually I have done work on soybean also, same kind of stuff, but we didn't look at the nitrous oxide emission. And what we saw that when we have high application of K, particularly not P, it actually decreases the nutrient content of the nitrates, and it decreases the nutrient content of manganese also. So it seems like we are overloading the system with P and K. It is causing the imbalance in the plant, and that might be causing decrease in the nitrogen use efficiency. But we don't know the exact pathway how it is happening. Sure. Yes, we did.